Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your mega preview pod for this week's Genesis Invitational. That's storylines. It is best bets. It is the one and done. Joining me to break it all down, Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick, hello to you.
It's good to be back, fellas. You know that video of like the two little kids running towards each other on the street and they hug each other? I feel like that's you two this week after the week you guys had in Scottsdale, and I'm just the onlooker, but I'm happy to be back with both of you.
It was romance. Truly special. Kyle Porter is here. Happy Valentine's Day, Kyle.
That's so good. I got back and my wife said, I don't want anything for Valentine's Day except for you to catch this rat that's outside our house, which sounds like a euphemism. It's not. There was literally literally a rat outside our house. So that was my welcome back down from your, you know, high of being at an elevated event all week.
Did you catch it?
Yeah, of course.
How did you do it? Stick of dynamite from the cartoons. Tell me stick of dynamite will do the trick.
Yeah. We don't have a house anymore, but the rat has been caught. So rat YouTube is a dark place, but
it's a rat hole.
I think that's rabbit hole that you're looking for.
Right? I tried.
So I basically just went on there, got some tips, threw some honey. I went honey peanut butter, not just regular peanut butter.
Sweet.
And yeah, he was cooked by the morning.
Was it like a sticky trap or snapper?
Snapper. Are those frowned upon?
Yeah, you're supposed to catch and release.
Yeah. Yeah, this.
You're supposed to catch it, take it 30 miles inland, and put it in something that resembles natural habitat.
How do you think rat Twitter compares to the live Twitter?
Same exact people. Perfect circle.
That's so good. I didn't even like, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't. And it just, it got me good. That was great.
As excited as I am for this episode, I just heard that buzz that comes from your AirPods.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. We'll have to mute you while you get that figured out. While we do that, Patrick, yeah, actually I think that is better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Patrick, we haven't had a chance to debrief from Phoenix. How was it for you? The first very
how was it being there?
Elevated event. Yeah,
we hate you guys so much. I have the worst case of FOMO in general.
So real quick, this can be your jumping off point. You put on Twitter, you said, "Well, I don't really understand the difference between this year and last year," right?
Yeah.
So explain that. What do you mean by that? And like, how did you perceive or experience the tournament through that lens specifically?
So my thing about the designated events so far is I saw people like putting out there that they're so great for the tour. Like this is going to be such a game changer for them. My thing really is, how can you judge the designated events as a whole, if it's going to be a success or not, at a Phoenix Open, at a Riviera, you know, two fields and tournaments that were, you know, you heard the players talk about it earlier in the week. Like John Rahm said, even if it wasn't a designated event, most of these guys were going to be there, right? It was only Rory and Colin were kind of the two outliers, so to speak, in they ended up being non-factors. But my point was being like, let's wait until, you know, maybe the API, a field that struggled a lot, or the Heritage right after the Masters, to kind of see if that same aura around these designated events is still there. Because, I mean, everything was going for the PGA Tour this week. You had Super Bowl weekend in Arizona, same place. The crowd was going to be electric no matter what. So all out, my point was really just like, can we sit and let's see how this plays out first before we go and rush and say it's the best thing ever?
What would be a good litmus test? Like Travelers?
I think
it's Wells Fargo for me, or RBC Heritage.
I think it's the Heritage, the week after a major.
For me, is probably API, a field that's really struggled in recent years because of its place on the calendar. And it's, I think, the week before the Players.
Yeah, this stretch is crazy. I think what you're saying is valid, but I also think, so sometimes, Patrick, we do this thing where we forget what events are like. We just, because we haven't had one in since the Tour Championship, basically. And so I think it was almost this, I guess you could throw Kapalua in there, but it was almost this remembrance of like, oh, the Phoenix Open, especially with a slightly better field, this is pretty awesome. And so it was this almost like remembrance of that and then transferring it to, what is it, 11 more PGA Tour events through for the rest of this season, and projecting that ahead of like, oh, this 11 more times is also going to be awesome. So I don't know that it was necessarily even about the Phoenix Open. It was just remembering what that type of event is like and then projecting it forward.
I don't think you can project the Phoenix Open forward, though.
No, I think you can, because that was the type of field that's going to be like, let's just say, for example, the Phoenix Open wasn't an elevated event. Let's just say it was a regular Phoenix Open this year. Let's say they only made 12 elevated events instead of, are they elevated or designated?
Technically designated, but okay. That doesn't make any sense.
Whatever. Let's just say they made 12. You still, I mean, Rahm's right. I think you still would have gotten a good field, and you could have said like, hey, pretend like this, but project it forward into 11 other events. I get that you don't have 200,000 people at the RBC Heritage, but it's still great players, great field. I think better atmosphere because those players are there. I mean, Rick and I were talking about this. Rick was so good on this, talking about how the Phoenix Open is the best about having an identity of any, I think the Players Championship is up there also, but of any kind of regular PGA Tour event, it knows what it is, right? And that's a very difficult thing to get to. It seems easy. LIV is trying to do it with all of its events, and it's really hard to get there. And I think some of the designated elevated stuff is going to give some of these tournaments, Rick, a little bit more of an identity of who they are.
Yes. Let's try to fix your AirPods again, but you're absolutely right. And the idea around this, Patrick, is not every week could possibly have 250,000 people and a drinking contest to go along with a little bit of a golf tournament, right? I mean, it was for the vast majority of the people, the golf was secondary or tertiary to the fun that was going on. But every event has an opportunity to do something and lean into something. Riviera this week, whether it was an elevated event or not, here's what I would do. I would lean into Hollywood. I would have this be, you've got all the stars here. The cart paths would have Hollywood stars of every player in the field. There would be a area around 10 that is red carpeted and exclusive, right? Like you can lean into your things and make these tournaments that matter a lot more often.
I understand that point. My gripe adjacent was just, we talked about, you know, you kind of hit on it that the Phoenix Open is so different than everything else. And it's so much better because it's leaned into that. And I guess I'm kind of agreeing with you guys now, but almost to my point where, you know, those other events haven't leaned into it, like Kyle said. So how can we project it to those events that haven't?
I think that's fair. And I think we're sort of on the same page with some of this stuff. You know, one of my things that I said to Rick last week about the Phoenix Open is that it forces, sometimes the PGA Tour takes itself too seriously, right? They pretend as it, they don't pretend. And there's, when I say the PGA Tour, I don't mean there's like one person doing this or it's anybody's fault. It's just sort of the overall disposition of the organization, of the brand. It takes itself a little bit too seriously when the reality is we have 4 or 5 weeks a year to take things seriously. The tour, I think, needs to lean a little bit more into the absurdity of a Phoenix Open. Of now, Riv is different because it doesn't like it would feel awkward if you tried to lean into absurdity there. It's a little bit more regal, right? But I just think I love Phoenix because it forces the tour to not take itself seriously. And I think that gives it this more of a, it doesn't mean it's not competitive, it just gives it more of an entertainment. Tiger was talking about like make a good product type feel. And I think that's, I think Phoenix is a really good product. And I think it's this sort of the style, if you will, of what the tour should be going for everywhere.
Lean into the regalness, lean into Tiger Woods. Why is there not a place for fans to hit shots into washing machines? Why are they not selling those iconic outfits like when he was growing up wearing those like red and yellow fits? Like, why are we not leaning into something at every single event?
I don't know, Rick, last time we talked, you said you should be in charge of the PGA Tour schedule. So
I should be in charge of PGA Tour.
Sounds like your pitch is coming along swimmingly.
And branding. I should be in charge of branding and the PGA Tour schedule. Easy stuff. I'll take care of it right now. KP, we'll put a bow on Phoenix. We should have had Netflix follow us around last week, shown the behind the scenes of us hobnobbing with celebrities and going to happy hours and doing all the fun stuff. Joseph here gets it. He would watch a reality show of us on the road.
Remind me of which celebrities we hobnobbed with.
I mean, we saw Alex Rodriguez from 400 yards away.
There we go. One thing, by the way, that a suggestion that was sent to me on Monday was at every event, you should have a group of fans that were categorized by their handicap trying to hit the most prominent shot that was hit the year before. So nice. Like if it was, I'm trying to think of Riv. Well, Riv last year, there wasn't really a Joaquin kind of dominated that. Let's say the Max Homa shot from the year before from the tree, like where he was stymied by the tree, have six fans try to hit that shot, make some content out of it, stuff like that. I think, not to take it back to that conversation, would be, you would really be leaning into that specific location, locale, event, whatever. The Phoenix thing was, I mean, listen, we've both been to better or more important events, better fields, whatever. That was one of the most, I thought, fun weeks of my career anyway, just in terms of getting to be on set with you and Joe Musso, and our crew was amazing. And it's easier to talk to players and caddies at a regular tour stop than it is at a major championship. That was both of our first time to be at TPC Scottsdale. It was really interesting and fun and cool. I would love to be back there. So just the whole thing was one of the more enjoyable weeks I've ever had in this job.
TPC Scottsdale, very underrated. Everyone talks about 16. The whole closing stretch is great. Obviously the fans and everything else, but like pristine conditions. Just TPC Scottsdale in general, very, very underrated.
And I think Mark said this on our Sunday show. He a little bit took it from me, but I actually thought his idea was better. He said, have a President's Cup there. I had originally said, have a Ryder Cup there, which people have been saying for a while. So that's not even an original take by me, but I actually think the President's Cup idea is probably, it fits more with like the tour and the TPC course. And, you know, it might be a little too absurd for a Ryder Cup. I think it would be the proper amount of absurd for a President's Cup. Should we ask Patrick our question of the week last week?
Oh, yes. This is a question. So for those of you who aren't aware, and you can probably figure it out, Kyle's very good at like asking questions and like getting responses out of people and like stirring up a good conversation. And there was one overarching question that we kind of asked everybody we encountered. So yes, Kyle, please pose said question to Patrick.
Patrick McDonald, what is one thing that is pretty much universally liked or loved that you look at and just say, I think I'll pass. I think I'm good. I'm out on that.
Well, I'm glad I'm back in the conversation. I mean, you got, it's like I'm on the outside of the circle. You guys got your inside jokes now. Like, I'm afraid of how long this is going to last.
This is like when Scovron and Tom Kim are in the same group as Fowler and his new caddy. Like it's just like, well, I'm not in anymore.
Gosh, this is, but it's going to be pie for me. Just man up and eat cake.
Oh, you did respond. I did see that.
Apple. Just any pie or specific apple specifically or any
pie? Apple pie is like an American staple. I'm out on that.
Man up and eat cake. How is
they're not
cake is just cake is so much better than pie.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. I'm wondering where the man up part comes from.
Just came out of my mouth. Sometimes words just spew. You don't really have control over it.
Came out of your pie hole.
Oh, zinger.
Pie. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I agree. I mean, I don't agree with it. I think I can get on board with it though.
Who are you guys?
Seinfeld.
Music.
Okay. You probably love Seinfeld though, Patrick.
I've just seen like it sparingly in like little spurts, not the entire series.
Get producer Troy, jump in here. I want to hear producer Troy. Thank He's got to have one. Or any of our producers.
We are double barreling on producers right now, which is very exciting.
Jump in, Josh. Mm. Let's baptize you.
Okay. What do you got, Troy?
I like the pie call. It's
gosh.
I don't know. I don't have one yet.
For me, it's college football. Gosh,
go first.
Whoa, college football. That's a take.
Wow. Yeah. Josh's debut.
The very first words he ever said on the pod was just out on college football.
Josh just comes out with a bazooka in episode one. That's incredible.
Josh might last shorter than the Swole Patio.
Wow. Okay.
Baseball. Wow, this is tough crowd.
I respect the absurd. I respect the brazenness of Josh's take. Potatoes, huh?
What is it about college football that you're like? What is it about college football?
Really, my main gripe, I guess, more specifically, it would be the college football playoff because, like, we've had like four of them that have been decided, but like the national championship game this year was the very first one that was even worth watching. And none of them are ever competitive. There've been like four of them in the entire college football playoff that have been decided by less than 14 points. So I don't get it. All of them are over before the first quarter is over. I'm just not a fan.
It's a good take
first. You heard it here first.
Wait, did you say the final this year was the first one worth watching?
Well,
wasn't it like a 70-point game?
Yeah, but it was close. Oh no! Sorry, the semifinal.
Yes.
Two great semifinal games, and then a blowout in the finals. Right.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. My bad.
That's kind of how I feel about the Super Bowl is usually a blow, like a, just not a good game compared to the NFC or AFC championship. I think those games are traditionally just better games.
Kind of like match play too, you know, like the final always stinks. I feel like,
oh, you mean like the Dell match play?
Yeah.
They're tired by the time they get to the final.
Is that over, by the way?
Dude, it better not be.
It's not on the calendar for next year.
So Troy, producer Troy, the problem with your take is I don't know if baseball is I don't know how beloved baseball is.
You're a generation late for that take.
Yeah. If you would have said that in like the 60s, you'd be like, who's this guy? You know, like that's what you're trying to do is like, why is this guy saying this?
I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. It gets boring.
If you were I'm out on LeBron, people would be like, what?
Like if I said LeBron's better than MJ, that type of thing.
No. By the way, speaking of Phoenix, Patrick, we're at Phoenix. I'm in Rahm's press conference.
Oh, I heard you.
Did you hear this?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think? I'll just tell the story and then you can tell me what you thought. We get to the end of Rahm's press conference and Rahm goes, okay, I got a question for all of you guys. And I was like, wow. Okay, I've been waiting for this. And he goes, LeBron's going to break the record tonight. Who you got, LeBron or MJ? And so I grabbed the microphone. I was like, I'll take this, John. We can talk about this.
John.
I said, Johnny boy. I said it's kind of a Tiger Jack Nicklaus situation where Jack has more wins, but Tiger was better at golf. So MJ has more titles, but LeBron is just better at basketball. And he was like, okay, I don't care. Like, who do you think is better? Is basically what he said. I was like, well, based on that, I think Tiger's better than Jack. So I have to think that LeBron is better than MJ. And he was like, okay, got a lot of LeBron fans in here. What did you think about that exchange, Patrick?
One, I mean, you're absolutely electric on the mic.
In front of
your peers, coworkers. It was very brave of you. And John Rahm, that stare he has, it's
if he was like an MJ stan and just lit me up.
Like shows he has an MJ jersey underneath his polo.
That would have been awesome.
But I do agree with you where athletes just naturally, like with time, they evolve to become better athletes.
Yeah.
And so from that respect, it is LeBron over MJ. And I'm not even like a LeBron fan. I would say I like MJ more, but LeBron's a better basketball player.
Yeah.
Okay. Get out of here, producers, before you burn this place down with hot takes. Okay. Speaking of content creation and more.
Ooh.
Yeah. Today is Valentine's Day, which means tomorrow is the 15th, which means tomorrow is when the Netflix docuseries is released. Technically, as of right now, if you really want to, episode one is available. There was a Super Bowl commercial with the QR code. It's on YouTube. You can go watch the first episode right now. Anybody can do it. You don't need to be in the press. But we've kind of had some sneak peeks. And Patrick, you watched the first episode. You said you got takes.
Yeah, it's not necessarily about the show itself, although this like English TV or newspaper TV critic put out an article. I don't know if you guys saw it.
I did.
It had to be like top 10 funniest things I read this year. It's still early in the year, but
it's all time. It's so good.
But mine is more like there's a lot. I'm not hating the players when I say this. I'm hating more of the game. Mm. Are we going to do, before I say this, are we going to do recap episodes of each episode?
Yeah. I mean, we probably like should.
Okay. Right.
Whatever y'all want to do.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything then.
No. Tell us your take.
All right. My take is everyone's doing these recap episodes, which is fine. I'm not hating on that. I get it. You get 8 free episodes of content. People are going to tune in. It's great. Numbies are going to be through the roof. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But people listening to this, which are probably some of us viewers, you're just listening to a recap of a recap that you mostly know about. It's like, what are we doing? Like, do you need a podcast for a documentary of something you kind of already know?
There are literally the most successful podcasts are retrospects of television shows going episode by episode of things you've already watched.
Yeah, but
Patrick, that's different because don't know what's happening. Like Game of Thrones, it's like theories. White Lotus, it's theories going forward.
There are podcasts like Office podcasts and Seinfeld podcasts that are very successful that did not start until 20 years after the series had ended.
All right, I'm out on Seinfeld then. I'm with Kyle then, if that's the case. And like, that's baffling to me that those are successful.
I get what you're saying. I watched the first episode and like I know the outcome of the tournament in the first episode, which means for me there is no drama in the outcome, which is like the overall story arc. But I did like the behind the scenes stuff and the nature, and it was obviously very well produced, but I unfortunately already know what happens.
Yeah. I think that was my take. My only takeaway from the first episode was that they kind of painted it like JT has been Speed's little brother for the past like 3 years. And that like really hasn't been the case at all. Do you guys agree with that or no?
I didn't walk away thinking that thought. I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying, the way that it was framed, but he got out of that shadow 5 years ago.
Right. Yeah. But it's like, I mean, it's obviously for like people who aren't really into golf, cause they're explaining like what par is and everything like that.
Well, I
think for those people, it can come off that way.
Yeah. That part was, again, Rick and I talked about this a lot in Phoenix. Sorry, Patrick, but
I'm gonna see myself out.
it's not made for us. That doesn't mean that we can't enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. And there are parts of it that I have enjoyed a lot. There's a clip from episode 8 that is just gonna talk about doing numbies. This clip is gonna do some numbies. Here's the weird part about the first episode. So it's JT Spieth. It's the PGA Championship. It's them playing a practice round at Southern Hills and kind of telling the story of JT's PGA. We always complain about not showing enough golf. I actually thought it showed too much golf. Like the whole second half of the episode was just golf shots, but it was almost like I wanted more of that time that was spent showing golf shots, showing ones that they didn't really focus on. Right. So the 3-wood into 17 in the playoff, the just filthy cut that JT hit and 2-putted for birdie to basically lock up the PGA Championship. They showed it, but I wanted I wanted 5 minutes on that, talking about it, showing every angle of it, people mic'd up. You could have made the whole episode about that shot and I would have loved it. Now, again, not made for me and I'm not the target audience, although some of it is very enjoyable for me, but that part was weird in that it showed a lot of golf, but I don't know if it contextualized the golf that I necessarily wanted to see. Does that make sense, Rick?
Yes. I don't think we're the demo. My wife loved it. But okay. Yes, so she gave it a 10. She gave it a 10 out of 10. Now the thing is, right. So I understand. So there's comments that are like, oh, why would you even have to describe what a par is, what a birdie is, how this stuff works? Which is like, yeah, that's crazy. But I needed that when I watched the F1.
Totally.
I needed it when I watched the tennis one of like how these tournaments work and all that stuff. So they get through it in the same way they do the other docuseries. And I think it's just fine. You're never going to see a graphic that says, you know, birdie is 1 under moving forward again.
They actually do explain how a tournament works in like 5 of the episodes, which is
crap,
which is a little bit tough, but again, like, To look at it from their point of view, us three are going to watch the whole thing, no matter if they just have Dan Rappaport up there saying Tiger's name a million times in a row. Like it's we're just going to watch it. They don't need to they don't need to do anything for us. Like we have to watch it. My friends who are kind of into golf and like maybe watch it with their wives, like that's who explaining par is for, or explaining how a tournament works is for. Cause even my friends that play golf and are into it, they don't necessarily watch the tour every week, or they don't necessarily watch all the major championships, you know? And so I think that's who the sort of explainer stuff is actually for.
What's episode two? Poulter?
Brooks and Scotty.
Brooks and Scotty.
It's there's some Brooks stuff in there that he talks in such a way that it makes you forget that he was ever the kind of cocky, I'm never losing to anybody again type of player. Because he basically in the episode is like, I don't know if I have it. And you're like, whoa. Like this isn't Joel Damon saying that, it's Brooks Koepka saying that, you know, and I think that is, and it juxtaposes it with, Scotty Scheffler's story. And it's really interesting because basically in it, Brooks is like, I can't play with Scotty Scheffler. He literally says that. And you're like,
that's wild,
man. Like, is this, and so it actually gives you a better lens into why he would go to live. Now, is that a injury thing? Is that a confidence thing? Is it probably all of the above wrapped up in something? Yeah, it's probably that. But it does give you a better sort of explanation of why the live thing was compelling to him.
Okay, I want to mine more into that, but we'll do that on recap episode for number two podcast coming.
The best episode is the Joel Damon episode.
Which is what number?
Five? Three is Poulter. No, I think it's four. Yeah, it's four.
Because five is Fitzpatrick.
Six is Finau and Morikawa, I think. And then seven is Sahith and Mito. And the last one is Rory Cam. I watched the last one, obviously. And there's some stuff in there. There's some newsy stuff, but also some very memeable stuff in there. They have Rory in VR goggles. It's going to just get memed to oblivion.
I saw like that in like the what's coming later in the show. And I was like, that's amazing.
It's going to get, just memed into outer space.
Go ahead, Patrick.
What were you going to say, Patrick?
Nothing. It's not important.
How about this? You know what is important, Patrick? Tiger Woods tees it up this week. Tiger Woods. Alert, really? Alert. 32 minutes into a podcast. Tiger Woods' name shows up for the first time. First non-major PGA Tour event that he will tee it up in over 800 days. He did it again. He went to the presser and he said, I wouldn't be here if I didn't think I could win. He said it again.
Yeah. The best question from the presser was definitely from Kevin Van Volkenberg at the end. I think, Kyle, you tweeted out the clip of Tiger talking about it. If no one's seen his answer, and it's kind of just him like in real time coming to grips of potentially being a ceremonial golfer.
You could see like the head, like the brain moving on that response, which is cool.
And I put the question in our Slack, and it's like he started off by saying, I can definitely win. I wouldn't be playing otherwise. It's kind of just crazy to me that 47-year-old Tiger Woods, a bum leg, bad back, ankles hurting, still has plantar fasciitis in his foot. Why do you think you can compete with like a Scottie Scheffler or John Rahm, Rory McIlroy? And that to me is just incredibly fascinating. But you know, it's people have doubted Tiger before and I've been proven wrong. I don't know if that'll ever happen again, but
if he'll ever win again, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiger's not going to win again.
It's just like his opportunities are now essentially all major championships. When you think about the field strength of what he'll play in.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting because if you look at the three components of him as a golfer, being physical, mental, and then this sort of like desire or heart or however you want to say it, physically not there, desire very much still there, and heart and like all that, whatever, however you want to call that. And then mentally, I think he's kind of hung up in between. I think mentally he's kind of there, but I think he's like mentally tired, you know, after decades of just putting his body through all these things and scaling the mountain. And it's a mentally grueling thing to get into a position practice wise where you can compete at that level. And I think he can't prepare to even get himself in that position because his body won't allow him to. But even if he could, I think mentally he's kind of worn down by doing that over and over and over again. So it's those three things that are kind of like in tension with one another that sort of, I think, was what he was trying to explain in that answer to KVV. And I think that specific thing about him, like him grappling with his own, like who he is as a golfer over the next several years, is going to be the most fascinating part about the Tiger Woods story.
Tee times are out.
Great follow.
You want to hear this freaking group of golfers that are going off the first tee at 12:04 PM off of Riviera, that stage up there off number one.
Rick can't even talk. He's so excited.
Tiger Woods is playing. Who would be like the two best players you could put Tiger Woods in to get me into a lather?
Well, we both know the answer, but I'm going to guess Jonathan Vegas.
Close.
And Victor. Doug Gim.
No, Victor is not in this group, but that would be, I would be on the floor if that was the case. Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy.
Okay, this might be my other answer besides Seinfeld. I'm out on supergroups.
I think they are literally the most unfair part about the game. And it's not even close.
Rick, do you have any like numbers behind these super numbies. Groups? Like who plays well in them and like who doesn't? Because some guys definitely struggle.
There's usually not enough data to be like, did he just have a bad day or did he have a bad day because he had to play in a group with Patrick Reed or Rory McIlroy or whatever, right? There's usually not enough of that.
Okay. But Kyle, I kind of agree with that. Like spread the wealth a little bit.
Yeah.
Like it's a big golf course. You got a whole day ahead of you. You don't need the three, you know, arguably biggest stars on the PGA Tour right now, all in one group.
Sounds like Spieth slander over there.
Here's the group that goes after that. 11 minutes Great. Later. Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, why do you say it's unfair, Rick?
Because anytime that you either as a top player have to play with other top players, or as a lower end player only ever playing with lower end players, it creates a situation where like the tee times and the pairings are just not equitable, right? Like there are advantages and disadvantages to playing in a group with Rory McIlroy. You're doing it in front of tens of thousands of people instead of in front of two people. Mm-hmm. And Rory, Tiger, and JT are never, if you're a featured group, you are never the first group off in the morning. You're never the 6:55 a.m. tee time. It's just, these should be randomly drawn. I cannot believe, I mean, I know exactly why. There's great reasons for why they do it. But this to me is the most unfair part of tournament golf.
Well, but are you trying to make it fair? Or are you trying to make an entertaining product?
I could do both.
I think what I would do is cut the tournament down to 54 holes, make them teams, and then do a shotgun start.
There we go.
What do you guys think?
Rick and I are both in on the shotgun start, by the way.
I'll be down for a shotgun start the first two rounds.
That's what we said.
Yeah.
Although,
and do it over the weekend.
Yeah, it is. This is an interesting point, Rick, because we talked a lot about Xander's drop at Phoenix, and I was getting worked up about, and you and I talk about this a lot when Patrick's not there, especially.
Almost exclusively while Patrick's
not there. Yeah, for sure. About how when you're on camera, it you're playing. Whether you want to say it's more beneficial or more detrimental, it's different than if you're not on camera, right? Sometimes that works in your favor. Sometimes it works against you. But I was getting, and it's sort of the same thing here, right? Like if you're a top player, you're never going to have the 6:45 a.m. tee time. And I think some of that works against you and some of it works for you. I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know how I feel about that. It is worth acknowledging that it's certainly different than what a Ben Griffin goes through.
There, Russell Knox, Nick Watney, and Thomas Dietrich, who go off at 6:40 a.m., will deal with a 25-degree change of temperature during their round, while these super groups and these featured groups will not.
Just play better. If you play better, you get yourself into these
future. I've heard playing better or being Ricky Fowler, although that's not he actually is playing better.
Ricky's good now. But to Kyle's point, it's kind of like the Cam Smith at the FedEx Cup St. Jude. Like if that's not on camera and he's not Cam Smith, that drop probably doesn't really get looked at. Or Rick, I mean, you talked about you want to be branding and scheduling, but let's not forget you're also a rules official there in Las Vegas for Lucas Herbert, right?
That's right. I'm doing it all. I am carrying a lot of weight for the tour.
So Kyle, what you're saying is right, where you might get the level temperatures throughout the day, but you're also under more scrutiny because all the eyes are on you.
Yeah.
Sometimes having a camera is to your benefit.
Well, and I guess I'm a little bit talking out of both sides of my mouth because I was hollering about the Xander drop and about how everything needs to be level and the rules need to be adjudicated. And now I'm talking about how, like, well, it's just an entertainment product, you know, but I think are tee times part of the rules of the game? Should they be? I don't know. I think that's an interesting conversation, and I don't know. Maybe they should be randomized. I mean, is there a gambling or betting benefit to being like to going off at different times, right?
First round leaders, morning.
True. Yeah, I mean the course is in a more, the greens are in better shape in the morning. That's why these guys have one morning tee time and one afternoon tee time. We're trying to make it fair. It's why they go off one round and 10 on the other.
Well, the other part is, and Tiger's had this for years, is you get such big galleries that there it becomes like there's no rough. You can't hit it in the rough because there's not any, because it gets trampled down. And so, like, again, that's a normal sport thing. You're not even playing the same field of play that everybody else is playing. Literally, you're not. Like, Scott Stallings, I don't know, just always go to him. He can hit it in the rough on 12 at Riviera, and Tiger can't because there isn't any, because there's 6,000 people watching him, you know? And I just don't know that you can do anything about that. And that's where it gets to be, you could do something about the tee times. But I don't know if you should. I don't know if that's the same thing as the rules conversation. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not.
It's a conversation we can have another day. We're going to get to our bets and our one and done selections. We'll go through them rather quickly. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Let's go! It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
And we're back. Okay, gents, this is where we take our 100 nuggets. We go over to Caesar's Sportsbook and we find one matchup in which we put 50 on it. We find one finishing position, any of our choice, in which we put 30 on it. Then we get 10 for outright number one, 10 for outright number two, and then we get an extra 50 nugs for a best bet, a money ball, anything that we want. Let's start with our betting grid and our matchups, gentlemen. There is a common name in all three matchups, but we have a little bit of difference of opinion. Do we have this graphic, please? Thank you kindly.
Cool.
Patrick, Kyle, you guys have opted for Sung J.M. over Victor Hovland. Both of you. Patrick, you go first.
KP, good news. I've kind of been hot on the head-to-head train.
He has.
So
that is good news.
It's not often. It's not often, but you're buying. You might be buying the stock at an all-time high here. But Victor Hovland, he's played two top fives here. Mm-hmm. You know, but he's ball striked the crap out of it both of those times. I know that's his bread and butter, but the higher rate of missed greens here combined with his short game gives me some pause. And Sungjae's just been playing great. And when you look at this leaderboard compared to it really compares to like a Torrey Pines and an Augusta National a lot of times. And Sungjae's played unbelievable at both those venues. So plus money, Sung J.M., who I believe is a better player right now over Victor Hovland.
Yeah, a lot of the same for me. Sung J is one of like eight guys that is gaining more than two strokes per round over his last 20. It's Rahm, Scheffler, Rory, Xander, Morikawa, Finau, Day, Hatton, Sung J, and Justin Rose. So I think him and Rose are probably the most underrated out of that group. Victor, I mean, we saw it on the range last week, Rick. He was grinding. He played decently well in Phoenix, and he plays very good on this course. So I don't feel a ton of confidence about it, but I think Sung J is a little bit underrated right now.
Sung J.M. plus 105 over Victor Hovland for both Kyle and Patrick. I've taken Victor on the winning side over Cam Young. Speaking of guys that I worry a little bit about their short game right now, Cam Young last year was the rare combination of powerful but savvy around the greens and with the putter. We're not necessarily seeing that as much anymore. I'll take Victor with great course fit, great course history over Cam Young. Patrick, this is where a run is going to start for you. It's going to be, yeah, I don't think these are typos, right? This is all accurate what we're seeing on the grid.
It is now. Yeah, we're going with it. No okay. Going back.
There is a lot of Justin Thomas on your card moving forward. You start here with the top 10.
Justin Thomas. I've been pretty critical of him kind of and his play since the Canadian Open. It hasn't been great, but I think he turned the corner last weekend. He gained almost like five strokes on approach the last two rounds. Drove the ball like a stallion, second tee to green for the week. And this is a course that's been very kind to him. He has three top 10 finishes the last five appearances here. If it wasn't for JP Holmes icing the kicker on him, playing four corners that one year, he's probably a champion. So give me JT every which way. And it starts with a top 10 at plus 190.
KP, you've opted to take the Aussie angle. The Aussies seem to play very well here at Riviera. Adam Scott, past champion. You're asking for a top 20.
Yeah, top 20. He finished T4 here last year, which I actually kind of forgot about, but he's plus 210. I didn't even really look at his recent form. I don't care that much just because of how well he's played on this golf course. I like him a lot, actually, to finish in the top 20, which means he's for sure missing the cut.
Stevie Williams on the bag.
There you go.
Is he?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Plus 210, plus 240 for my selection, Sahith over, excuse me, top 20. And this is just such a, this is a much better spot for him than TPC Scottsdale is with the way that he drives it. And everybody's going to be playing out of the rough. And he is still very volatile, but he's actually getting a little bit more consistent. I think he has three top 10s in his last like seven starts and he hasn't missed a cut in a while. So we're getting the learning curve. He's figuring it out. And I got him at plus 240 to finish inside the top 20. I'll just go very quickly here. Two outrights. I'm living at the top of the board. I watched John Rahm, KP. We walked with him. He sucks up all the oxygen. He is not even remotely playing well and can beat almost anybody. I'll take him at 8-1. And I took JT. Patrick's right. It looks like he found something. Looks like he's about to snap off. I got him at 16-1.
Wow, that's incredible, because I got the same number
twice
with JT. Allegedly twice. This might have to be a Mark Immelman situation when we look back on it and be like, oh, you know what? I actually had Rory McIlroy at 10-1. I don't know what happened.
You need your numbers audited there?
Maybe after the fact, yeah.
Okay, sure.
I was an auditor back in the day. But Sunday night. Yeah, 16-1, Justin Thomas. I don't think I need to say more.
Well, I'll keep the 16-1 going. I've got Xander at 16-1 and then Morikawa at 20. Guys, Morikawa, I'll start with Morikawa. His numbers over his last 20 rounds. I mean, so you're looking at the best ball strikers other than Morikawa have been Rory, Scheffler, and Xander, and they're all at about 2 strokes per round gained in ball striking, which is really good, like really, really good. Finau and Rahm are up there close to 2, but not quite as high as the other guys. Morikawa is at 2.3. He has been striking the hell out of it. And I know he missed the cut last week. I think Riv is a better spot for him. Finished T2 last year. Xander's been super consistent. The WD in Kapalua feels like it was 5 years ago. There's just been no issues since then. And he's playing really consistently. I mean, we talk about Rahm's high 4. I think Xander's 4. It's not as high, but it's among the highest in the game. So I like him at 16-1.
Rahm, Xander, Morikawa, JT on the board for the boys. We obviously think an elite player is going to win this golf tournament. We then had the producers give us an extra 50 bones, and we took it over and found any bet in the whole wide world that we could fathom. KP, you are taking Max Hima because he is him. No? Was that Chugi?
Guys go to Scottsdale 1 week and
do you know what Chugi means, Patrick?
It's come across my desk before, but I'm not super aware of it. But man, who are you guys hanging out with in Scottsdale?
People that are younger than us. I doubt
some
that
ASU co-eds or what's going on?
No, I doubt that it has come across your desk. That doesn't sound like the kind of thing that would come across one's desk.
I mean, you'd be surprised. Come across the desk, you know, piece of paper coming in from the intern, you know.
Sure.
Chugi. Sorry. Elaborate though on Chugi.
Us old people, me and Rick, think is cool, but according to young people like you, is not.
Can be used broadly to describe someone or something that is out of date or trying too hard.
Okay. Interesting.
So like live marketing would be Chugi.
Me calling Max Homa Max Hima would be Chugi.
Max Homa or Hima, whatever. top 10 plus 220. Plays great, obviously, at Riv. He's coming off of he didn't finish great last week, but, you know, obviously won at Torrey. He's been hitting the ball really well. I like the number. It's probably a fair number, but I think he finishes in the top 10 this week. I was tweeting about this last week. You make a case that Homa, if he finishes high up at Riv, is one of the 3 or 4 best guys in the world right now. I don't have him there. I released my KP GR on Monday and he's not in the top 5, but you could at least make the case, I think.
Max Homa top 10 plus 220. I'm going Wyndham Clark top 40 minus 105. The fit is right. He hits it long. He's got a great little short game. He's playing well. He's played well at this event before. Wyndham Clark to beat about a third of the field or so, minus 105. And Patrick, you've done it. You are offering us the clean sweep here on JT.
KP, you weren't on the show last week. Actually, two things. When you first tweeted out your rankings, I thought you like struck a partnership with KPMG or something if we're talking about auditing. And then second,
if they're interested, let me know.
Some of the big wigs follow me on Twitter for some reason. But last week, guess who I bet on for my best bet? Arguably the hottest player in the world.
John Rahm.
Rory McIlroy doesn't finish inside the top 10 for the first time since like the Stone Age.
since he turned pro.
So this we gotta like switch something up. There's some bad juju going around, but top 20 for JT minus 110. This is the week the streak ends. I guess I'm 0 for 6.
Yeah, that's a tough one to look at right there.
Yeah, you are 0 for 6. Do we have the results for the other bets? Did we see those? Yeah, this is the shot I wanted.
Yeah. There's no way that's updated.
This is the one. Yes, this is very updated.
No way that is updated. Absolutely.
I've won almost as many best bets as I've won overall bets.
Yeah. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. We have one final thing to do, gentlemen. And it is the world's most dramatic one and done. We will reveal the selections, but first we will take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions. If you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. I'm happy to announce that we got through this week's one and done selection process with no drama. Everyone has made a selection, and these selections are locked in. They will not be allowed to be changed at any point over the course of the next 4 days. Before we unveil the one and done selections, I will say they're rather boring. There are a lot of familiar names in the one and done selections, and only one of us is a lone wolf. And it is none of us who are present here on this show right now.
Damn.
Without further ado, please release the picks. Here we go. From bottom up, Sia Najad has successfully entered a pick. Congratulations to you, Sia. That pick makes him a lone wolf. And it is Tony Finau. Patrick, it has been a long, arduous road, but Sia seems to be back on track.
What's is it 3.6 million again this week for the winner?
Yes.
So I mean, he knocks this one off, and it's his there's a strategy, right? He's a lawyer. We've talked about this. He'll mention it as well, as we've said. He got to keep, like, KP, you used Morikawa last week, right? For a miscut, and he didn't even use anyone. So I think there's something he's crunching some numbers that I don't know about, I think.
He's playing 4D chess.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a little dispute in the chat. David says Sia successfully entered a pick last week. Technically, I will assure you that technically he did not enter a pick. So that's pretty indisputable. Kyle M, who we met, Kyle. KP, we met Kyle M. We brought him up on the set. We took photos. We sent him the photos. He has gone with Xander Schauffele this week. Your pick as well.
Yeah, I love it. Great meeting Kyle M. I think we both picked. Did he have Morikawa last week?
I believe that's right. I think the Kyle's brains are melding.
Yeah, they are. No, it was great to meet him. Xander, like I mentioned earlier, super consistent, playing really good golf. The floor is high. He'll probably miss the cut, but I am excited going into the week.
That is right. The Kyles have opted for Xander. Kyle M is at 1.6 million. Kyle Porter, our Kyle P, $3 million. Greg, Patrick, and myself have all opted for the same golfer. If you've been paying attention and following along at home, we know who Patrick has selected. Officially for us, it is Justin Thomas.
So I'll admit the whole designated event being thrown in this year has really thrown a wrench in my plans, where I'm kind of nervous with how far behind I am. So it's kind of like a horse race. You don't want to be on the rail come home stretch. So I'm using JT here. I probably would have liked to use him for, I don't know, like 12 other tournaments, but I need a big payday this week, I think.
Is that do you feel panicky using him right now? Both of you guys?
No.
Well, Rick's in a much better spot than me. Mine is 100% out of a sense of a place of panic where I need a seven figure cash here.
It's the second biggest payday of the year.
That's why I'm using JT.
Yeah, exactly. So what could possibly be the panic?
Well, traditionally you think majors and everything.
Well, but I keep forgetting that majors are smaller payouts than this.
Yeah, I'm going to use Sepp Straka at the Masters.
Could probably be a good pick.
I wouldn't do that, but
yeah, this will be decided by the Wells Fargo, the Travelers, the I don't even know what else, Riviera Memorial. That's what's going to decide.
RBC Heritage.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but yeah, panicky. I am panicked.
The fans and Mark have opted for the same player. Mark, very excited to enter the selection of Max Homa. He told me about it last week in person. He texted it to me as well to make sure that he was in. He asked me to send him the updated standing so that he could see his name at the top. He is very, very excited about the $3.6 million he got last week, and he will try to get another $3.6 million this week. So to recap from the top down, Mark, $6.7 million, Max Homa. Rick, $5.6 million, Justin Thomas. The fans, $4.1 million. Max Homa, Kyle Porter, $3 million. Xander Schauffele, Patrick, $2.6 million. Justin Thomas, Greg, $2.2 million. Justin Thomas, Kyle M, $1.6 million. Xander Schauffele, Sia, $814,000. Tony Finau. Those are the selections for this week's One and Done.
Sia was the lone wolf. He was also the lone wolf last week.
That is technically true.
Did you already make that joke?
No, I like it.
Okay.
No, I've been worn down by Sia trying to get his, you know, it's crowd work, right? It's like when you're massaging the refs so that, you know, when it's time for a big crunch time call that goes in your direction. I feel like that's what's happening.
Is what he did worse than what Mark did though?
Mark's was bad. let's be real. Mark's was bad.
We did have like sort of it was like almost a grace period, like a preseason, like you get seven fouls instead of six. That's not actually a rule, but if that happened,
that doesn't make what Sia did. I think they're both bad. You got to.
Yeah. I think Sia's like we had the grace period like we were talking about, but it was after. Like,
but okay, so the intent of the rule though. The whole intent, if we're going to talk about golf, the intent of the rule is so that you don't see who everybody else picked. Because the information gives you an unfair advantage. It's like gambling. It's like betting on anything. And I'm unconvinced that Mark even knows how to look and see who everybody picked.
He definitely does not.
and I'm equally unconvinced that Sia was using what he did to get an advantage. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, if you hit it in the water, you hit it in the water. Like it doesn't mean that the rules shouldn't be carried out. I just don't know that it led to either of them getting an advantage.
For sure. But here's the big thing that this is an entertainment product. Speaking of entertainment products, you have to have a pick in for the show because the whole point of the show is to release the picks. I understand the golf doesn't start till Thursday morning. We have to put a show on. We have to have a graphic to release the picks. If your pick is not in by the time we do the show, you don't have a pick.
Thank you. I agree. And the chat's just going off.
I agree as well, Rick. It's just, it feels a little bit double standardy.
For what's the double standard?
Well, we let Mark put the winner in and we didn't let Sia get the third place guy in.
It was a grace period though.
Technically Mark's was later than Sia's. Sia's was what, 44 minutes late? Mark was like 24 hours late.
Did she like come to your house last night with a brown paper bag and like cold hard cash?
No, this is more of an attempt to get pull Mark back down to the field than it is. I don't really care about Sia.
then I do agree with you, Kyle.
What do you want? I mean, listen, I don't want to be the dictator here. Do you want to vote for it?
Rictator.
Do you want the Rictator? Do you want to vote? We got three people here. We've got three rules officials. We can break a tie right now if you want on whether John Rahm's money gets added to Sia's total. We can break a tie if you want to do it right now.
No. I think we established the grace period and it was over. And I think we should never have a grace period again, I guess is what I'm saying. I actually think the rules should be enforced, but that they should always be enforced. Like this is more of an anti, like Mark shouldn't have gotten the money than it is a Sia should have gotten the money take.
I do agree with that.
Okay, so we're not going to put this up to a vote.
No, sorry, Sia.
No.
Love you, bro, but justice for Sia is no justice for Sia.
Reporting those comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, there's like $100 million on the line moving forward. I think it's going to be just fine.
Sia's trying to turn the chat against us.
Yes. this is the most dramatic one and done on the internet. It's always something.
Yeah, I'd give him half the money. No, I didn't.
I'd rather give him all the money or none of the money. You can't give him half the money.
A big asterisk on the season. I mean, he didn't get his pick in. I'll march in the streets for this.
Rick, you got your Chris Harrison Bachelor most dramatic season ever going on.
Yeah,
right,
this
now
is wild. Like that, this is where we would cut to clips of what happens later in the season, and it's just us at a major championship in a fist fight over what the pick actually was, and like, you know, Dan Rappaport and Riggs are trying to peel us off one another. That's what happens after I end the show here.
Yeah. Sia's here for the wrong reason. Yeah.
Scenes from the next episode.
I think that's a big talking point these days. They're here for the clout.
He gets to keep Rahm, right?
Yes. He gets to keep the best player in the world. He didn't use Rahm. He just got no pick.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Sia. The justice for Sia is, it feels a little, it's more like justice for the field with Mark's shenanigans in January.
I slapped Mark's wrists when I saw him. I said, never, don't you ever dare.
It was a Xander burrowing hole situation.
It really was. And actually, to be clear, we also hooked up Greg and Sia with an extra $200,000 that week because Mark cheated.
We gave them money because Mark cheated.
Yeah, we gave them the $200,000 min because Mark cheated.
That's so good.
This has been the wildest. We're just making the rules up as we go.
I honestly already forgot about that too.
Yeah, don't forget about the $200,000 we gave them.
That's great.
Our noses are clean. Let's keep them that way. All right. That'll do it. Big thanks to not only producer Troy, but producer Josh doing all the hard work behind the scenes. For Patrick McDonald, you can find him on Twitter at Amateur Status. You can find Kyle at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good.
Somebody said injustice for Mark. Yeah.
This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.